our worth is inherent, right? Like we come into this world 100% worthy. Like you would never look at a baby and be like, oh, you know, you're too fat, or you're not good enough, and send it back, kind of thing, right? Yeah. Your drive doesn't have to come from not enoughness. Yeah. You know, it's like you're achieving from the overflow. Also, this idea of what would you do and achieve if you got no recognition for it? My brother's death was huge in teaching me this, like really facing my mortality, because when you're afraid of death, then you can't truly live. So it's just this constant hamster wheel. So really learning to surrender to life, understanding that you can't control anything.
Hi, and welcome to the 155th episode of the I Love Success podcast. I just want to take a moment to say thank you for being part of our mission. Thank you for leading with the heart and having the courage to go out in the world and live a full life. Thank you for being kind. Thank you for being open. And thank you for being you. I could never do this without you and all the incredible people that share so open-heartedly on the show. The journey continues, and as you know by now, our mission is to help at least 10 million people in 10 years to achieve their dreams. This week, we're going to talk about human potential and doing less to actually achieve more. Our guest is the co-founder of the Flow Consciousness Institute, a research and training body dedicated to developing cutting-edge consciousness-based tools for unlocking human potential. Let's talk flow with the wonderful Jackie Knechtel. Welcome, Jackie.
Thanks so much for having me. It's great to be here.
Yeah, I'm excited. How did I pronounce your last name good?
You actually did great. Yeah.
Where's that from, Knechtel?
It's German. It's so German. You said it better than I do.
Okay.
So, more accurately than I would.
Awesome. Yeah, I'm super excited to be here with you today. And you've been on my radar for a while because we met the Meeting of the Minds almost a year ago in Hollywood Hills now. And for people who don't know what it is, it's like a group of people who meet and help each other elevate. Thank you, Jared, for setting that up. And I remember you talking about flow and doing less to achieve more. And I pissed me off a little bit because in a way, I love flow, and I felt flow as a martial artist that when I've been competing or doing the forms or fighting. But I always had a belief that hard work will give you more. And so I'm kind of curious of what we're going to talk about today. And maybe I need to take a chill pill in my life sometime. So thank you so much. First of all, Jackie, let's just talk a little bit about you. Where did you grow up, and how what did you dream about as a kid?
Well, so I grew up in New York, originally from the East Coast, lived most of my life there. And as a kid, I guess I really, and it sounds like most children's dreams, is really to go to space. And loved going to the planetarium and looking at the stars. I wanted to be an astronomer. And my dad would take me to the planetarium, and I wanted to learn all the names of the constellations, and just felt this connection to something so much bigger than me. And it was so inspiring. So yeah, that was something that was really moving for me.
That's cool. Do you remember like that moment when you were fascinated by this and like why?
Yeah, I think, you know, as I was saying, this connection to something so much bigger, you know, that makes you feel humbled, because we are just this tiny little speck in an enormous universe. And so learning about galaxies and nebula and supernovas and things like that as a kid was just fascinating.
Yeah, that's awesome. And how were you as a kid? Were you outgoing? Were you the lonely child? Like, how were you as a kid?
As a kid. So I grew up a middle child. I had two brothers. And so, you know, I got picked on a lot. And I was always pretty outgoing, really a people person from the time I was small. I wanted to know absolutely everyone. And so I talk about this ability that I have now as a super connector coming from my deepest wound of, you know, feeling like people were going to leave me. And so everyone that I'd ever met when I was a child, I wanted to stay in touch with. So if I went on the bus to go to the mall and I'd meet someone, I'd, you know, get their number and stay in touch with them forever. So, you know, I've got friends that I've known, you know, my whole life, and people that I've met at various points along my journey that I'm still in touch with, you know, but it came from that place of really wanting to fit in and wanting to be liked. And but I've always been outgoing and curious and loved people. And then I went through a phase where I was just, I was into punk rock and went through this total nonconformist phase and just thought I would be my full weird and see who was still around. Like, who would still like me if I brought my full weird? And I was pretty weird. So.
Wow, let's talk about this because this is interesting. So where do you, have you had that conversation with yourself where that fear from being left came from?
Yeah, I mean, I think just like deep childhood wounds, core wounds with my family, abandonment wounds, and just feeling like, you know, I wasn't lovable enough or I wasn't good enough. And so inevitably, if, you know, I would meet someone, there was this fear that I wouldn't be enough for them to want to stay in touch with me. And so that was a deep wound.
Yeah. And how have you dealt with that? Because I recognize when you're talking about this, I recognize myself because I kind of had, like when I started, like when I was a kid, I had a lot of friends, but then going into high school and the years before high school, I kind of lost all my friends because I wasn't, I didn't drink like most of my friends did. I didn't smoke like most of my friends did. And I was just, I didn't fit in their life in a way. So I kind of got left behind, and that wounded me a lot and scared me so much to let other people in because of the fear of, like, if I really put my guard down, especially with the girls, I had that problem, like, I'm gonna get hurt, you know?
Yeah, I feel that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I guess the way that I dealt with it initially, like I said, was going from, you know, this desire to fit in to kind of the polar opposite.
Yeah.
And
like, fuck
I was
everything,
like,
right?
Kind of, yeah. If I was like, I'm going to bring all of my weirdness and see if I still have any friends. And the irony is more people liked me because I was showing up as my, you know, at the time, authentic self. And so I came to this place of just not caring so much what people thought. And, you know, I'd be lying if I said I don't care what people think now.
Yeah.
But it definitely got less as I worked through that wound.
Yeah.
And now, you know, I'm in Meeting of the Minds community. I'm in all of these other communities.
Yeah.
And I don't necessarily feel like I belong to any of them.
Yeah.
So I have this sense that I belong to no one and I belong to everyone. And one of my greatest gifts is I'm very adaptable. I'm kind of this chameleon that I feel comfortable in any situation, anywhere.
Yeah.
So you could throw me, I was with tribes in Kenya,
yeah,
and I felt totally comfortable. I lived in Saudi Arabia. You know, there's like all of these different scenarios that I've been put into, and I kind of feel at home everywhere. And I think that's as a result of really working through that wound. So the need to belong isn't as strong as it was.
Yeah, it's so true. And I'm kind of interested in belief systems. And I know, like, abundance, for example, there's a lot of people, they don't believe in abundance. Like, how do you feel about, like, how can you start, like, changing your belief system so you're actually open to receive what the world has to offer, right? Because a lot of times we see people that have everything, but they're not happy.
Right.
That is a belief system, right?
Yeah, well, because we have these belief systems that, you know, money will bring us success and happy, you know, then ultimately happiness, you know, but that's just not the case. And it's more of an inside job. So starting to examine the beliefs that you have around money, you know, there's so many people that have so much programmed belief around money, whether it's rich people are all evil and greedy, or money doesn't grow on trees, you know, the scarcity and lack beliefs. And just kind of looking at what did you hear as a child? What kinds of things did your parents say when they were talking about money? How did your parents interact with money? And start to see, like, what are some of those conditioned programs that we have around money that are starting to really, you know, have this virus-like quality in our consciousness. But also, it's usually deeper than that. It's usually not so much about the money and more about our worthiness and our lovability and our deservingness to have happiness, to have abundance, to have success. So it's, you know, the money is only kind of the surface layer. Yeah. But you usually when you get down to it, it's something around, I'm not worthy.
Yeah. And how do you work on being worthy? Because I like, just to give you an example, this podcast, I've had more than 150 people right now that are like at the top level in the world in their field. And one of the main reasons that most of them have come so far is because they want to be fucking loved, which means they have had a belief system that if I do this, I'm worthy, right? Which creates performance, right? I'm not sure if I want to use the word success, because I think for me, success is also being happy. But it creates great performances in like sports or business and things like that. But so what's your opinion about that, and how can you change that a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. And I definitely created success, abundance from that place of unworthiness and trying to validate my worth by achieving more and more and more. Yeah. So it was kind of this.
And it's never enough, right?
Never enough. You know, it's like you think you're at the top of the mountain. It's just like you turn and then it keeps going up. And it's this insurmountable mountain that, you know, just creates so much strife and anxiety and depression. And, you know, it was really challenging for me. And just seeing where my success came from, this place of, you know, achieve in hopes that one day I would be worthy or I would be good enough. And wow, you know, it was so damaging. And I think, you know, there were so many platitudes that I heard that just never really resonated. And then one day I was at a retreat that it clicked in for some reason. It was just talking about something that I'd heard before, but it never landed until then, this idea that our worth is inherent, right? Like we come into this world 100% worthy. Like you would never look at a baby and be like, oh, you know, you're too fat, or you're not good enough, and send it back kind of thing, right? Yeah. Like every child that comes into this world is 100% worthy of being here. And then we just create these stories from our distorted perceptions or our inherited trauma and all of these different things, that we create these narratives, these false illusory beliefs that, you know, we could ever not be worth, you know, that we're, our worth is mutable, right? Yeah. So this idea, and you know, it's conditioned too. So in our academic system, right? So as a kid, if you work hard, you get a gold star. And, you know, you're rewarded for doing and achieving rather than for being. And so a lot of parents will unknowingly, you know, reprimand their child, or, you know, good boy, bad boy, that kind of thing. And it's like linking the behavior to the worth of the child. And so they think, oh, well, you know, I just dumped my plate of food on the floor, and now I'm a bad boy. So now I have shame, right? And it's not just that I did a bad thing, but it's that I am bad. And so we take this on, but the reality is we always are 100% worthy, and no one or nothing can ever add or take away from that. So all of the compliments, all of the praise, all of the recognition, all of the social media likes, none of it enhances your worth. It doesn't make you any worthier than, you know, the homeless person on the street, or, you know, anyone else on the planet. And, you know, nothing else can be taken away from you. Your worth cannot be taken away because someone is trolling you or cuts you down or criticizes you or judges you. It just doesn't change. And so when I really sat with that, it landed for the first time, and I was like, wow.
You know, I'm just thinking about one thing that I have struggled a lot with, but I've been learning, like, if you are making a mistake, or if you're dropping that plate, or you're losing a competition, or you're failing a test, or a date goes wrong, or your heel breaks, or what, it doesn't mean you're a bad person. That was just something that happened. Mm-hmm. It might have been a mistake. You maybe had a bad performance, but it's not, doesn't make you unworthy or a bad person. And I think we have such a hard time distinguishing that as human beings, right? Because if I fail the test, it means that I suck. No, you just fail the test that might have been hard, or you didn't do it the right way because you're a beginner. If you try again, you're gonna make it. And if you don't make it, try again, you're gonna make it. But it doesn't mean you're a bad person. And I see that all the time, like, because I'm in sales and I've been in sports, like, how people act when they are performing and how they act when they're not performing. The same person, it's completely different. Right. They're still as worthy, but they just didn't perform. So now they suck, right? Now they're shrugging their shoulders, they're hiding. And then you see the winner is like shoulders out. Hey, I'm worthy, I did this. How can we kind of work on that so we are not putting everything on performance all the time?
Yeah, absolutely. And then it brings me back to the point that you were making, that so much success is born out of this trauma, or this not feeling like we're worthy or good enough. So can you still succeed and win gold medals and do all of these incredible things if you don't have that, you know, to push you? And
can you?
You absolutely can, you know, and it's so much healthier. Your drive doesn't have to come from not enoughness. Yeah. You know, it's like you're achieving from the overflow. Yeah. So really coming back to that place of self-love and self-acceptance, and it's, there's nothing wrong with celebrating your wins, and, you know, really looking at the times that you fail as opportunities for your learning and growth. Yeah. And, you know, and examining them, you know, if you're feeling disappointed, what is that about? Where do I feel that in my body? What is this trying to show me and to teach me? Because that's a core wound, and it has valuable data for you to work through to heal that. That's why we have these types of scenarios, to bring us back to the wholeness, to the completeness, to the worthiness that we come into the world, but somewhere along the way, we forgot.
Yeah, no, I agree. And when you were saying this, I just wanna kinda share an example. As an athlete, the first time, I've said this before, I'm not sure you've heard it, but the first time I became a national champion, on the car ride home, I was 18 years old. The only thing I could think of is, how can I defend this the next year? Which means that I'm only worthy if I defend it, right? Worst possible mindset ever. Still gets you performing, but doesn't make you happy at all.
Right.
And then I had my last performance where I became a world medalist. I said, I'm gonna I'm going to train as hard as I can, and I'm going to perform to the best of my abilities. Whatever happens, happens. That was the best performance ever. It took a long time, but when I was ready to let go, it actually became better. But I was living for years that I, with the mindset that I had to think this way, had to be ultra focused. I couldn't have a beer the day before a competition. You know, that's not gonna affect it unless you're in an endurance sport. Mm. It might even be better. Like the day before I became a world medalist, I had a beer and a good dinner. Yeah. I was relaxed. Then I went in, I performed because I had trained for 20 fucking years.
Right.
So that's kind of a journey that I don't want other people to go through, because it's so much pain too.
Absolutely. You know? It's so painful. And then there's also, I see so many athletes that have achieved great things and then they get injured.
Yeah.
And then what?
Yeah.
You know, now all of a sudden they have this huge identity crisis because they don't know who they are. They don't know their value or their worth anymore because it was all attached to this one thing that brought them worth and value. And that's so dangerous with anything, whether it's our career or, you know, wealth or success or relationships, whatever. When it's all, our worth is hinged on that, then you go into control. Like you said, you have to defend that title, because if you're not controlling it, your ego is at risk. You know, all of that can be taken away and then you're going to be unworthy.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's such a trap and it's so dangerous and it's so toxic and unhealthy to create from that place. And, you know, and then you really can't enjoy it because, like you said, you're not even celebrating the win.
Yeah, it's more like a... instead of a yes.
Yeah.
That's so sad.
And it could be all taken away so quickly. Yeah. And, you know, so it's also this idea of what would you do and achieve if you got no recognition for it?
Yeah.
Like, would you do any of these things?
Wow.
Like, really just sitting in that question, would I post on social media? Would I perform? Would I train? Would I, you know, do whatever it is that brings you this sense of worth and value? Would I do all of this if I got zero recognition for it?
I love that question.
Yeah.
Yeah. And be brutally honest, you know? And that's kind of what I'm struggling with, because I love sharing, I love giving, but I also have an ego, you know?
And we all
it's
do.
A constant battle there, you know. How do you balance that shit?
Yeah, I mean, we all have an ego. It's, you know, it's just part of our consciousness, and you know, there's no reason to get rid of it. It's just being aware of it and noticing what's driving your behavior. You know, there's nothing wrong with sharing your gifts in the world. That's how the world evolves, right? Yeah. And when we're all operating from our genius, connected to our passion and our purpose, and sharing our gifts with the world, that's when the world thrives and is in flow. So, you know, it's just noticing when you're doing things really to come back to that place of validation or worthiness.
Yeah. So Jackie, let's talk about flow. What is flow and how does that work?
Yeah. So the type of flow that I teach is called flow consciousness. And I co-created this methodology with my business partner, Justin Fairman. And
he's such a cool dude.
Yeah, he's pretty great. And so we call flow consciousness, a new operating system for your consciousness that allows you to live in a more limitless reality. And so it's really, it's not like a flow state, because flow states are temporary. This is like it's a psycho-spiritual framework, a way of being that you can live in all the time. And when you're living in flow, you start to have exponential success and growth and living in this place of emotional freedom and equanimity. And life just really feels like it's conspiring in your favor. And it really does become more effortless. So you can absolutely create success in your business, or, you know, achieve great things in sport or whatever it is, but from this place that is just so connected and attuned to your gifts and your passion.
So how does that work? Like, if for someone that, let's say, I'm a hard worker. I like setting goals. I like making a plan. I like to do the work every single day, and I believe in that. Where does flow come in for?
I mean, that's great if that's truly your flow. So flow is very unique and individual, and everyone has their own flavor of it. So if making lists and strategizing and ticking things off your to-do list brings you joy, and that's like what really lights you up, then great, do that. That's absolutely your flow. For me, that feels very confining and constricting, and having, you know, lists and things is not how I operate. So if I was doing that just because, you know, Tony Robbins told me that's one of the 10 things you need to do to be successful, mm-hmm. you know, and I'm following this formula, that's not flow. So it's really tuning in and following the thing that feels exciting and inspiring to you. So like allowing your intuition be your compass. And if that means working hard, you know, then great, that's your flow. But it's also when you're in alignment, you know, like we were talking about with your passion, your purpose, your gifts, and doing the thing that excites you and lights you up, it's like you're not working. So I imagine you have that sense of like, oh, I get to do this podcast because this is cool for me. I get to talk to amazing people and I get to share this message that helps people live their dreams. Like if that's bringing you joy, but there's, of course, there's going to be things that you have to do and take care of. You've got to, you know, do the recordings and the editings and the social media and all of that. It's not like you're not taking action, but it's inspired action and it brings you joy. So that's the difference. It's not like hustling and grinding away to achieve a goal or an outcome, like, and all the while you're miserable.
Yeah. I have one more question to you, and then I know you have some fun stuff to go to. And that's something that I ask all my guests, because what we want right after this podcast is for the listeners, the viewers, to take some step in their life to move closer to their dreams and goals. So what would you be your best tip?
Yeah, so something that they could do right away and something that we encourage people to do is to radically follow their excitement and inspiration in every moment. And try it on for a week and really make every decision from that place of what in this moment do I want to be doing? Where do I want to be? Who do I want to be with? What do I want to be wearing? What do I want to be eating? And not think, oh, well, this is what I should be doing, or this is what I said I'd be doing, and noticing where all of that chatter comes in, because that's the edges of your comfort zone. So it's like, oh, well, I have to, you know, cross off things on my to-do list. But what I really want is to, you know, meet a friend for lunch or whatever. So really following radically your excitement and inspiration in every moment for every decision for a week.
Wow, that's a great tool. And the control freak in me is kind of get freaked out by hearing that. But I love it. And, you know, I believe in life when you... That's why I want to have different people and share different views, because I believe I can learn most from the people that challenge me. And I truly believe that there was a reason for us having this conversation. And I believe it's going to help many people. It's certainly helped me already. And this has been lovely, Jackie.
Yeah, I would just, you know, say on that note that the most confronting, triggering things that I experienced, these perceptual shifts when people had said things to me and I was so pissed off and I was like, no, that's bullshit. That's something to look at. Yeah. When you think it's not possible, when you think like, oh, that they're full of shit, there's something to look at there. And just try it on. And, you know, maybe it doesn't work for you. But usually when there's that kind of response or reaction, it's because, like, on some level, you know, it's true, but there's, like, you know, all of the defense and the story that gets in the way. And I've definitely experienced that along my personal growth journey. And on the other side of that, when I really surrendered to it, were some of the most profound breakthroughs of my life. So when you're following your excitement radically, it's going to take you to to all of your edges. And that's great because it's showing you what you need to work through or what you think is not possible.
Thank you, Jackie.
Yeah, thank you.
I really appreciate it. If people want to learn more about flow consciousness and what you are doing, where can they find that?
Flowconsciousness.com. That's kind of the home for all of our programs and research and all of the events that we're doing and everything. So, and social media is just my name, Jackie Nechtel. So,
awesome. We're going to put the links as well. And I would encourage everybody that listened to this to actually, you know, be open. That's why we're doing this, to learn, to grow as human beings. If we always look at what we know, we can never grow. Mm-hmm. Oh, wow, that was good. That was not planned, but it was good. So, thank you. And thank you, everybody who watched and listened to this episode. Always fun to have you here. I am on a big fat mission to help at least 10 million people in 10 years to go after their dreams. But what really matters is not that number. What matters is you right now. If you can improve your life just a little bit, that will help me so much and make me happy, make me sleep better at night, and overall just raising the bar for life. What I want from you is, if you like this episode, give us a review, share it with someone that needs a little bit more flow consciousness in their life. And also check us out at ilovesuccess.co. We have more than 150 amazing episodes with game changers who share their content so freely. But you need to take it into your life and give it a try. Thank you so much, and talk to you next week.